available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, to the Podcast of Champions. I am not David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network. I am Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. Together, we're the Podcast of Champions, but today, I am the Podcast of Champions. This is a solo edition, rare solo edition of the POC, and my apologies, there's been so much breaking news going on. Trying to get David and my schedules to align up wasn't going to work, but we wanted to put something out there for a lot of you since we didn't do anything this week. And obviously Thursday, this is recording this Thursday night, very big news day in the Pac-12. So I wanted to kind of give you my thoughts on what was going on in the Pac-12 with some of the different reporting that's been going on with some great people out there, the Pac-12, you know, covering the Pac-12 like John Wilner and John Canzano. But we also were on a Zoom call today with Larry Scott and some other factors in the Pac-12 talking about the return of Pac-12 football this fall. So we'll get into all of that. Also was on a conference call with Mike Bone, the USC athletic director, and he shed a little interesting lights on some different topics as well. So there wasn't a ton of specifics as far as the schedule goes, but I want to give you guys all just kind of an overview of where we are. But before we get into that, there's some other questions, I guess you could say, or just different topics we'll get to. I'll get into everything that happened on the conference call, but I want to give you kind of some of the newsy items that were sort of going on, like heading into this. So one of the reports came out that the Pac-12 CEO group had an informative and productive meeting. That was last week, and then they were going to reconvene on Thursday, September 24th, to make a decision regarding the possible return to play prior to January 1st. He said, health and safety officials of our student athletes and all those connected to Pac-12 sports will continue to be our number one priority in all of our decision-making. So that was the Pac-12 statement last week when the CEOs met, but they didn't have a vote, and that was kind of the big issue. But they postponed everything till Thursday, and today was the day we thought everything was going to happen. One of the big issues was California and the governor, Gavin Newsom, we talked about this last week, came out and said, they weren't going to impede college football from happening in the Pac-12, but they weren't going to back off the 12-person cohort thing. They wouldn't allow gatherings of more than 12 people. And then earlier today on Thursday, John Wilner broke the news and he said that now the California would. But talking to sources at USC, that still seems to be an issue. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. As of now, though, I talked to Mike Bone about this. USC, at least, and I believe UCLA and Cal and Stanford are not allowed to have gatherings of more than 12 people. There might have been an increase to like 25, but not full on practices like the 49ers can do and the Rams can do and the Chargers can do. The big issue for me on that is testing. And now that they have daily testing available, that should be able to be cleared. I think it's more of a logistical issue, but as of right now, the California schools still can't have full gatherings, but it seems like that's where we're going at right now. Then some weird news broke earlier today. The county of Boulder shut down all gatherings for college-age citizens for 2 weeks. So if you're between 18 and 22, you go to University of Colorado, you're not allowed to gather for the next 2 weeks because they've had some spikes in the COVID positive tests. So Colorado was one of those schools that was ready to go. It seemed like they were ready to go and practice. This sort of puts a damper on that a little bit. I did talk to Adam Munster-Tiger about that, and he told me he was hearing the football team is most likely going to leave Boulder to get work in for the next 2 weeks. They haven't had the details conveyed to the team yet, but based on what he's heard, he'd be surprised if they stayed in town and like sat on their hands for the next 14 days. So that was a weird kind of breaking thing that was happening heading into the CEO meeting. But the The positive thing was what John Willen reported, that it looked like the California officials were going to allow the cohorts to grow more than 12 people. If you were reading some of the columns this past week, a lot of criticism of Larry Scott, which, you know, makes sense. There was a lot of critical remarks. A lot of it stemmed from the great John Willner report about the Pac-12 bonuses. So they were supposed to be paid these bonuses September. They were moved up a few months. Now, there were some benefits that some of these players that were going to get furloughed or laid off were going to get their bonuses early, and they would get them before they were laid off. And that was nice, but it sort of just seemed like a bit of an empty gesture. I think Willner gave Larry Scott some credit for that. Some of the other reporters, like Pete Thamel and John Canzano, were still very critical, thought it was, wasn't very helpful at all. Because the executive bonuses, starting with Larry Scott, about $2.5 million, there was about $4 million in executive bonuses. And, you know, you could argue that's like 40 employees that you could have kept on. And there was a lot of issues with, you know, some of the employees got laid off, which was better because you got some kind of settlement package. The furloughed employees, there was a lot more issues with that. So a lot of criticism of Larry Scott. I definitely recommend checking out some of the columns that were written this past week. But, you know, obviously that's going to be swept all crazy going on now because of the real news. September 3rd was the day that the testing announcement for rapid testing came about. And the problem is, in some of the columns I read about earlier today, a lot of the coaches were taken aback. They were floored by this. And Larry Scott knew about it. I think Canzano wrote that basically he wanted to break the news himself, and he didn't let the colleges know that this rapid testing was coming. So it was a surprise to everybody, but it didn't allow people to prepare. And that's something we'll talk about on the Pac-12 call, the lack of preparation, the lack of action from the Pac-12 after the rapid testing announcement was made. There really wasn't much progress made until, you know, the Pac-12 CEO meeting today. So, you know, to me, Larry Scott was content starting late when the Big Ten was doing it, and they weren't prepared to go earlier. But once the Big Ten shifted, Larry Scott didn't shift himself, and that kind of left the Pac-12 lagging behind. And so we'll see where that with there is. The Pac-12 network is in a weird state right now. They did broadcast the webinar today live, but there's really no producers right now. It would have been great to have some studio shows and things like that, but, you know, guys like Mike Lamb and most of those people were all laid off or furloughed, and the games themselves should be okay. I think this was a John Canzano report, because many of the people that work on the game days are contractors, so they weren't impacted by the layoffs as much. Right now, though, if you turn on the Pac-12 Network, they're just showing old games. And the ticker hasn't even been updated because this might have been John Willner said that the ticker guy was also let go. So you have a ticker that's like days old because they haven't been able to do that. So there's some weird stuff going on in the Pac-12 Network. And just watching the Zoom call today, there was like six people on it. You're like, how many other people are left in the conference? So we talked about the bonuses a little bit. We do know, as far as bowl games go, some news came out today as well, that the NCAA Football Oversight Committee is recommending that all teams are eligible for bowl games this season, and bowl games can be played as early as December 1st. Now, with everyone going until late December with their regular season, or at least until like December 12th or 5th, and then championship weekend, which a lot of, you know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 is going to really be a regular season game weekend with all the other teams outside of the conference championship game. I don't see why you could have a bowl game that early, but that's what the oversight committee recommended. But really, it's important that, you know, say Stanford goes 3-4. Well, do they make a bowl game? Well, yeah, they can make a bowl game now. So they're going to remove that eligibility requirement. And if someone tweeted out too, and I apologize, I don't remember the reporter, anyone that had a clause in their contract, any coach, that if you become bowl eligible, you get a bonus. Do those coaches all get bonuses now? Because basically everyone is bowl eligible. So a bowl can pick you even if you're 0-6. At least that's the recommendation from the Football Oversight Committee. From the Stanford side, RJ Abadia wrote a really interesting article. You can go check it out on the Bootleg earlier this week. Basically what he's saying that the Stanford football players were sent an email before where they were, quote, encouraged to find off-campus housing. And in the article, it was going to be paid for by the student athletes. So like at USC, athletes are back. They're in their housing, and it's being paid for by the school. Where Stanford, and according to RJ's article, they really wanted to keep the student athletes and the regular students together, and they didn't want to separate them in any way. So if football players came back, they'd have to find their own way around there. So places like Stanford, they're going to have to ramp up to get into this the 20-hour work week stuff. And obviously, they still have the local issues with Santa Clara County and the state of California. But Stanford's going to have a little bit more work to do to kind of get up to speed. But definitely check out that article. So Kyle Bonagor also tweeted that Stanford submitted its plans to the county as far as Santa Clara County. So it looks like they're moving forward. But programs like that, where like Utah and Colorado, at least until this latest ordinance came out, they were more ready to go. Places like Stanford have a little bit more work to do. And also Mike Bone, the USC athletic director, he did give a lot of credit to the USC players that wrote that letter to Gavin Newsom that we talked about. And it seemed like it was the catalyst to kind of put the governor of California on the spot and sort of get this ball rolling. So John Wilner agreed with that it really pushed things forward. It seems like it did. And by pushing those things forward, it seemed to alleviate some of the concerns, and that's what happened in the CEO meeting today. So what happened in that CEO meeting? Well, first, we're going to have Pac-12 football. It will be a 7-game conference-only schedule starting November 6th, which is Friday, and the rest of the games will be that weekend. 7 weeks to play 7 games, and they will be 5 division games. Everyone will play the 5 division games. There will be one crossover game, and we do not know the details of that crossover game as of now. Michael Castillo, who covers USC for Reign of Troy, had an idea where, why don't you have it a reverse seeding? So the number one seed from the north would play the number 6 seed from the south from last year and kind of do a reverse round robin, I guess, or whatever you'd say with that. So number 2 from the north plays number 5 from the south and vice versa. So you don't have the reigning champs from each division having to play a really tough crossover game. And Kyle Bornegora actually called in on the and asked about it. The crossover game will count in the standings. So to win the Pac-12, that crossover game counts. We saw what the SEC did. Alabama had to get 2 extra conference games. Georgia had to get 2 extra conference games. The other 2 favorites, they got 2 cupcakes. They weren't, they didn't put Florida on Alabama's schedule, or they didn't put LSU on Georgia's schedule. They got like Kentucky and, they got the easier games, and you're trying to protect the best teams. And I think that's the same thing. I don't want Oregon to have to play like USC or Arizona State or Utah. I want them to play like Arizona or something. Arizona, obviously they beat Oregon. They have a chance to win, but you don't want to put the 2 best teams in the conference going against each other. So we don't know though what is going to happen as far as that goes. We do know. So there'll be 7 games. And then on that championship weekend, whoever has the best record from the north and the south of those 6 games that you play, with the 5 conference games and 1 crossover, they will be the 2 number 1 seeds, and they'll play each other on a Friday, December 18th, on so that championship weekend. But the rest of the weekend, the other teams can play as well, so they'll get a 7th game. They didn't announce it, but we assume it's going to be Big Ten style, where number 2 from the north plays number 2 from the south, number 3 from the north plays 3 from the south, all the way down to 6. And that would probably make the most sense. So we assume, but they didn't have any details on the schedule. And anytime we asked anything like that, they weren't really sharing anymore. So I think they're still trying to determine that, but that seems the way that they're going. There won't be any fans. So we know that, at least until January 1st. So no fans will be allowed at the games. In the release, it said, in the sport of football, Pac-12 universities with the necessary public health approvals may commence practice immediately with a 7-game conference-only season to begin on November 6th and the Pac-12 championship game on December 18th, enabling Pac-12 teams to be considered for the college football playoff selection committee. The football schedule will be released in the coming days. So a couple things there. You can start practice right away as long as you're cleared locally by health officials. So Colorado can start practicing, at least if they go to another county. The California schools, from what I've understood, talking to different sources, and what Mike Bone had said, they are not cleared. The cohort issue has not been cleared as of yet. So that's still something that's being worked out. But soon, if it is, they can still go through with their smaller workouts, but they can't do the full team kind of stuff, which really when you're doing your 20-hour work week, there's a lot of that coming into play. They could do full team conditioning workouts and agility drills and things on the field, like these walkthrough sort of things where you're working with position coaches. All that stuff would be okay, but right now it's not in California. My understanding is if it's cleared at the state level, most likely the local, it'll be cleared. I know in LA County it'll be cleared. I believe in Santa Clara County and Berkeley, it would be as well. So, and I think Oregon has pushed through that. So it's not everyone on the same page yet, but they should be able to start pretty soon. Most likely the camp aspect would start early October, and then you'd have a month to get ready for the start of the college football season. As far as the college football playoff committee goes, they're going to be eligible for that. There's no Larry Scott's on that management committee for the college football playoff. All of the conference commissioners are. We'll get into some of what he said about that in a little bit, but basically there was a sense that he said there's no minimum number of games. So even though the Pac-12 would only be playing 7 games, that doesn't exclude them from consideration. But there's all these factors going to come into play. It doesn't seem very likely at this point that even a 7-0 Pac-12 team would make it in, but you know, we don't know. But there's a lot we don't know right now, but there's no technical reason why a Pac-12 team couldn't be selected. So, and like I said, we'll know the schedule in the coming days. There's going to be daily antigen testing. So that's the rapid testing stuff. That's the the big announcement that came on September 3rd, but they're also going to do weekly PCR testing. And if anyone tests positive, they'll do a PCR test afterwards. And they'll also do any positive test, there'll be cardiac monitoring. So I tried to read up on, John Milner tweeted out some good information on the tests. I'll give you my quick kind of thoughts on the testing real quick. So essentially from the papers I've read, the antigen testing is this faster, rapid testing. You could administer it, multiple per day. Mike Bone said that they could do 30 to 50 in an hour with the machine that they already got delivered. They're still getting up to speed on the machine, so they can't do it yet. But 30 to 50 tests in an hour, and you get the results in 15 minutes. The benefit of that is how rapid you can do the test. The PCR testing, if you wanted to do like absolutely, is there a more viral load or not? Is it positive or not? The PCR testing, a lot of people say it's the gold standard, but it takes longer and you're not going to administer it as often. And I definitely saw in the paper I saw from John Wilner that he tweeted out, I forget the doctor that was talking about this, but they show the sort of viral curve. And even though the PCR testing will catch the virus sooner, as far as like if you're infected or you're exposed, the virus takes a while to build up and build up that viral load. If I tested, within hours of being exposed, the PCR test would click as a positive, where the antigen tests would not. But within a few hours or, half a day, the antigen test would catch it. It's just in the very beginning, as the viral load grows, it will turn a positive on the PCR test before the antigen test. But by testing every day, you actually get a much better and more accurate result with the antigen test because you're going to know what's going on. You might not do that PCR test every 3 days or every 7 days. And really that window that you're shooting for when the PCR test would show positive and the antigen test wouldn't is hours. So by just testing every day, you're going to figure out what's going on a lot faster with the antigen test. But they will verify it with a PCR test after you test positive. And then they will do the cardiac monitoring just to make sure for the myocarditis stuff. So that's sort of the testing protocol of what they're going to do. But really, I think I tweeted out the paper on the Podcast of Champion Twitter page, Podcast of Champions Twitter page. Check that out. But it was really interesting to see just how much daily testing helps, because you really want to remove anyone that tests positive from the population. And by testing every day, you really limit the fact that they could go out and infect anyone else. And that's really what it is. You don't want someone walking around. This is a virus that it's different because the asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic cases are, you're still contagious. And that was spreading. So you had people out there that weren't sick that was spreading the virus. By testing every day, you basically eliminate that or significantly, like 98% or whatever, reduce it. So that's where I think the conference feels pretty good, even though they're going to try to squeeze 7 games in 7 weeks. By everyone testing daily, it's going to make a big difference in the spread. So I thought that was interesting. And like I said, practice can begin immediately for all the schools as long as they get approval from local health officials. He was asked about which, you know, health officials were allowing practices and which weren't. He wasn't getting into specifics in that. But a lot of positive information came out from different, from the different athletic directors across. Everyone seemed to be on the same page in this one. And if you were following along, 3 o'clock was the time that the meeting was supposed to start. And I think John Wilner broke that news. And 5 o'clock was going to be the media call. And I think about 3:15, 3:30, I email a Pac-12 representative about, is there going to be a call at 5? And she would not confirm. She said that nothing's been confirmed yet. But within like 15, 20 minutes, they actually sent out a media release that there was going to be a call. Then the reporters started breaking. There was going to be a season. It was going to be November 7th weekend. And then actually the Pac-12 released a statement that I just kind of went over. Those were kind of the main points of that. And then we waited around for an hour or so for the webinar, the media webinar, and they actually broadcast that on the Pac-12 network. And who was involved? Before we get into that, I didn't really go over this at the top. I'm not going to take any questions today. This is going to be an abbreviated show. I just needed to kind of share all the breaking news with everyone, all of our listeners, and Dave and I will come back and we can have some reaction to all of it. But this was just more of an informative podcast. No Disney princesses, no Civil War talk or anything like that. And I'm not going to take any questions or anything, so we won't be doing the...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
And I know we got a lot of questions in our email box, and I'm sure we're going to get more. So Dave and I will probably, hopefully early next week, we'll be able to come back and do a show. But why don't we, I think we're going to take a quick break now. Before we do that, I want to let everyone know about MyBookie. They've been working with us again this year, and we love working with them. So unless you've been living under a rock, you know the NFL is back, and NBA playoffs are in full swing, which can only mean one thing. It's winning season at MyBookie. I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm putting my money on it. Sometimes I have a gut feeling about a matchup. Sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team, you know. I like to bet on the Pac-12 teams. Now we're going to get a chance to do that, at least in November. Regardless, whether you're betting, you've been betting for years, or this is your first time betting, MyBookie is your best bet for the season. With the biggest online selection of bets and props, they made it simple to win and easy to withdraw your cash. Right now, they have a $100,000 super contest for only 10 bucks an entry, and they're giving away $5,000 in cash prizes every 4 weeks. So you'd be crazy not to invest in your sports knowledge with the kind of potential return on your investment. $10 to win thousands? Sign me up. You should sign up too. You can do that. You can sign up at MyBookie. Just use the promo code PAC12 and claim your 100% deposit match all the way up to $1,000. That means if you put in 100, they'll give you another 100. If you put in 500, they'll give you another 500, up to $1,000. It's an easy way to jumpstart your bankroll. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and now Pac-12 football. They're all going to be on tap. It's not too late to get started on your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. And I'm so excited. Dave and I are going to be able to make our picks again, which, you know, We would really like doing that. There aren't going to be as many picks, but we're going to start making our picks, and we'll do all the previews and all that kind of stuff coming up. So we're happy the offseason is coming to an end, and we're going to take a quick break, come right back, and I'll tell you what happened in that Pac-12 webinar. All right, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. Or not we. I'm back. So like I said, we'll have David Woods coming back on the show early next week, and we'll get some reaction. Maybe he'll do a solo podcast as well. That would take some work, and you know that's not really in David's wheelhouse. Yeah, it's getting to be 9 p.m. on a Thursday. I had to do – so it was weird because the Pac-12 had their announcement, and you know their webinar was at 5 o'clock. And then I got a notification that USC was going to do their webinar with Mike Bone at 6 o'clock. So that was another hour. And then I had to do a USC podcast with Keely Yore. You can check that out on peristylepodcast.com and get that going. And then, because David couldn't do it tonight, and I'm not going to be able to do it tomorrow, or at least later on, I needed to do this show. So this will be going late in the evening. But we, you know, wanted to get you guys something. We haven't done anything this week. And there was enough news going on and enough exciting news that's Pac-12 football. They wanted to put something out there. So I apologize. We don't have our regular banter. But at least this will be hopefully informative for you guys. And then, you know, send in your questions, what you like, what you don't like about this. And Dave and I will do our best to answer it on the next show. Okay, let's get to the Pac-12 meeting. So who was on it? We had Larry Scott, of course, the Pac-12 commissioner. You had Michael Schill, who's the president of the University of Oregon. He's also the chair of the CEO group. So he's a leader of the meeting that they had today. Ray Anderson, you know him as the athletic director at Arizona State. And then Dr. Doug Aukerman. So he's Oregon State's senior associate athletic director, but he's also the chair of the Pac-12 Student Athlete Health and Wellbeing Initiative. Very informative. I heard him on John Canzano's podcast talking about a lot of this pandemic stuff, and he's very informed, and I think he was a great addition to this call. So I'll go over some of the notes I took from the call. First off, you know, Larry Scott kind of gave his, like, you know, boring, whatever, just like, here's what we're, you know, health and well-being, blah, blah, blah. There was just sort of like a blah, blah, blah opening, nothing like real groundbreaking coming out of what Larry Scott had to say. Which he seems to do that a lot, where he just kind of talks and there's not really any meaning of what's coming up there. But Dr. Schill probably put the first tweet-worthy comment of the call, where he basically said it wasn't about the money. You know, they're talking about what's changed. You know, the daily testing was a big deal. You know, understanding myocarditis and, you know, some of the local officials being more reasonable and you know, as far as the numbers of positive cases in many of the across the Pac-12 footprint, all of that stuff got better. So what Dr. Schill was saying is really all those factors went into them changing their mind and reversing their decision. But the interesting part was he said it wasn't about the money. And whenever someone says it's not about the money, you know exactly what it's about. It's about the money. There were some questions to Larry Scott about, well, why are they doing this? I think, no, actually, Dr. Schill, well, if it wasn't about the money, why is this only going to be football? And, you know, he had a good point where the NCAA is the one, they delayed the fall championships until the spring. Football is not controlled by the NCAA. So it actually allowed football to go forward and play earlier if they wanted to. There's not really an option in the other fall sports because the championships were moved. You could play now, but your championship would be in the spring. And basketball will be able to start November 25th. So there was an announcement with that as well. But we're not a basketball podcast, and we'll let David talk about that if he wants to at a later date. But he said that they went over a lot of the pros and the cons of playing now in the fall and playing in the winter. And there was just a lot more pros, you know, just more beneficial to play in the fall than the winter. They wouldn't come out and say, you know, having the Big Ten go on there, you know, playing earlier was a big factor, but obviously it was. I mean, you can't be the only Power Five conference that wasn't going to play. So that was a big, big con, I would say, on the pros and cons list, playing in the winter. There was, you know, really trying to get out there, being a part of the college football playoff discussion, at least being, you know, eligible for a New Year's Six Bowl that would, you know, a lot of money would be available there. Just being in the college football playoff mix, there's a lot of money at stake for the conference. So I don't buy that it wasn't about the money. I think a lot of those pros and cons, money was involved in that, but just like the reputation of the conference. And as you know, as I was recording the USC podcast, the Mountain West came out and they're going to play as well. They're starting 2 weeks earlier. So they're starting October 24th, a couple weeks earlier than the Pac-12. That's interesting. But there's a caveat there where, you know, they need approval from local governments as well. So I think there'll be even more pressure on the state of California to push through with that, you know, now that the Mountain West wants to play as well. So the San Diego States and Fresno States and San Jose States of the world, they want to get out on the practice field too. And they're going to be under that same, you know, working on those same conditions that like USC, UCLA, Cal, and Stanford were. But yeah, so pros and cons list, the pros were a lot more favorable for the fall. And so that's where they went. It was a unanimous vote, like we said. And so I thought that was interesting. Oregon President Michael Shull also said they didn't vote last week. The CEOs didn't vote because they wanted to talk to students and faculty. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but it's good that they were going to sort of get more feedback. I really feel this was a failure on Larry Scott's part, not following up on the big news that, you know, it was big news. The antigen testing, the daily testing, the deal with Quidel. I think that was a big deal, but they just didn't take advantage of it. And I feel like they felt comfortable delaying the season, and they felt comfortable having the Big Ten as a partner. Once you knew the Big Ten was going to go forward, or to try to go forward, that's where I feel the big failures were for the Pac-12. So yeah, that's nice you can talk to students and faculty, but if you had your ducks in a row, you could have voted last week, and you know, maybe you got an 8-game schedule in. Maybe that's the difference between like an Oregon making the college football playoff and not. We don't know at this point, but I mean, there was a lot of praise for Larry Scott the way they handled it. It was a united front. And there was a united front again today, but it was a pretty chaotic couple of weeks since the antigen testing was announced. And once you saw that the Big Ten was pushing forward, there was just no movement with the Pac-12. And I think that was a failure because they could have helped with the local health officials. Ray Anderson had an interesting comment where he said, like everyone says, they're focusing on the health and safety of student athletes, but he said including mental health. And he didn't go into more details on that. And I'm going to try to see what else I can find out about it. But to me, that was a lot about it's tough on these players to watch, you know, their counterparts in other parts of the country play and them not. And, you know, you could argue, are the players safer when they're on campus versus if they're home with their families? You know, obviously, it depends on what their behavior is. But I would feel safer if I was in an environment where I'm getting tested daily and, you know, everyone around you is tested daily, so I'm probably not going to be bumping into anyone that's, you know, positive for the virus, because if they tested positive, they would be, you know, quarantined and taken out of the, you know, they wouldn't be in that same area I was in. But I really think the mental health is underrated part of this. You know, there's a routine for these college football players, and, you know, we talked to some players that just, it was tough to watch college football games and not be a part of it. I think it was tough on the Big Ten players. And you heard their outcry, and we heard some of the Pac-12 players and what they were able to say and the letter they wrote to Gavin Newsom and all that. So, yeah, I think the mental health aspect of this was important. They knew the players wanted to get back out there. And if they can do it safely and they can feel it's actually safer for them to do it, I think that was a factor you had to consider, which I don't think we heard anything about that before. I apologize. I wish we would have got some follow-up on that. But I think the mental health aspect was important. So Dr. Doug Aukerman for Oregon State, he said that the Pac-12's robust testing would make, and the quote was, makes cardiomyopathy, so that's the myocarditis stuff, if I believe, something we can help manage. And knowing that you're going to test those guys every day, knowing that you're going to do, you know, cardiac screening on everyone, it just didn't seem like the myocarditis stuff was a deal breaker. It was a big unknown. And I think that was a factor in the last decision. But now I think they feel a lot more comfortable. They don't feel like it's going to be this lasting thing that anyone that gets the, you know, some athlete tests positive for COVID, they're really risking their health. I think if they know there's any kind of cardiac element or cardiac, you know, enlargement, they can, you know, be quarantined longer. They don't have to participate in any kind of workouts, things like that. So they feel like they can mitigate that risk. I think that was a big part of it, too. As far as the College Football Playoff Committee, Larry Scott was sort of pressed on this a couple of times. And Andy Staples from The Athletic was, he was on him pretty good. And the first question was about, you know, are you going to push for an expanded college football playoff? And Larry Scott is on that management committee. He said they were committed to the traditional college football dates. He emphasized that there's no minimum number of games for Pac-12 to be eligible. He said it's the committee's job to pick the best four teams. There's more intricacies this year, including, you know, games could be canceled, player eligibility. Like, you know, what if Trevor Lawrence is quarantined for a couple weeks and Clemson loses a game? Do you keep him out of the playoff? But do you think they're one of the best teams because Trevor Lawrence wasn't there? So he felt there was a lot more that went into it. And it's going to be up to that group of experts to pick which teams are the best four teams. But Andy Staples grilled them, saying, you should be the biggest advocate for expanding because the Pac-12 is playing less games. There's no out-of-conference games. And they've missed the playoff the last 3 years. And Larry kind of kept the, you know, told the company line. He said that, quote, there's no serious momentum or discussion on college football expansion. And, but there should there be. And I feel like what he was saying was, there's just so much going on, so many changes going on. We didn't want to like add to it, but I feel like you could have made things a lot better by, you know, how much work is it to say, let's go to eight, you know, and every conference winner gets in and then we'll pick three other ones. And I think, you know, you could get a UCF in there. You could, you know, it doesn't matter that Oregon or USC or Utah or Arizona State or Cal or Washington, whoever, if they win the Pac-12, they're in the playoff. Maybe they get boat raced by Alabama in the first round. Who knows? But at least you'd get in. And because it's just not going to be an equal playing field. There's some conferences playing an out-of-conference game. Some conferences playing more or less. So I don't know. It would make sense to me. But Larry Scott, he said there was no discussion about that, which that's one of those things where you would want Larry Scott to say. He said behind the scenes they're like pushing for things. He wants the Pac-12 to be included. But I think that's one of those things you can come out and say, I think we should expand the playoff. And you would get a lot, you know, Larry Scott doesn't have a lot of friends in the media. A lot of people would back him if he came out and said that, like, we need to expand the playoff for this year. I think that would be an effective strategy. That's not his style, whatever. Michael Schill also said the Quidel test was necessary, but not sufficient as far as local governments loosening restrictions. So there was some pushback to Larry Scott about, hey, why did you guys sit on your hands after September 3rd and not push some of the local governments? And so Michael Schill was saying that it wasn't just about rapid testing, that there was more pieces to the puzzle that needed to come together before they could have come to this conclusion that they could safely play. But even though you saw the other conferences going back to play, to me, the most important aspect of this was the daily testing. And you look at the California NFL teams that have the exemption that they're allowed to practice. What was the big deal? Well, you don't want them to go out and be a drain on public health by having them practice football and then go out and get people sick, because they're not in a bubble. They're out in society as well. But because they're going to be tested daily, that's how you mitigate that risk. Once the Pac-12 was going to have daily testing, it would be on the same playing field as what the NFL. Now, I know it's professionals versus amateurs, but you don't care if you're going to catch COVID from a professional football player or amateur football player. It's the same. By testing daily, that's how you mitigate the risk. So to me, that was a little disingenuous. The Pac-12 could have pushed faster for this. They could have talked to the state of California. They could have talked to the state of Oregon to push this through once they had the daily testing. And it's funny, Mike Bone on his conference call had a sort of little throwaway line where when he was praising the letter that the players sent Gavin Newsom, he basically insinuated and said that before Gavin Newsom wasn't taking Larry Scott's calls. And after the letter, he was. And that sort of, you know, put it out there. Obviously, the social media pressure, if there was just a snail mail letter from some players to the governor, no one would care. But it was out there. All of the media in the Pac-12 were talking about it. It put a lot of pressure on Gavin Newsom and his office saying, you're the reason why West Coast football is not going to happen. And he was like, whoa, back off. So I feel like that did grease the wheels a little bit. That did sort of push things through. But as far as could they have done things sooner, I don't know if it was what Mike Bone said, that Larry Scott, you know, couldn't get Gavin Newsom to pick up the phone. I don't think they really reached out. And I think the governor of Oregon said as much. So, yeah, I feel like the Pac-12 could have done more, especially knowing that Larry Scott knew about this, the rapid testing, before it was announced on September 3rd. You could have been working behind the scenes on that. So I feel like that was a missed opportunity. But, you know, we'll see. Michael Schill also said, you know, he kind of warned everybody, look, if this is not sustainable, we're going to stop playing. If there's, you know, they didn't have any kind of numbers as far as like roster spots or position groups or whatever. But he made it pretty clear they could stop playing at any time. And he was talking about stop playing and then mentioned like pausing later, but really shutting it down. So it didn't seem like, you know, maybe one of the caveats was the CEOs were like, look, we'll start, but if stuff goes crazy, shit hits the fan, we're going to stop. So he mentioned that a few times. So that's something to watch out for. Like if there are, you know, like you have a team like Houston that hasn't played a game yet, or Virginia Tech, if something like that happened in the Pac-12 after a week or two, you might see it all get shut down. So I'm curious to see where that goes. I think I mentioned before, like Larry Scott was asked which schools could practice now, which couldn't. He didn't mention anyone by names, but just said they each program had to be cleared by its own local and state officials. So we already knew that. As far as the schedules go, he was asked about like, hey, no fans, could you have a 9 a.m. game? And I think what people are clamoring for is what the Pac-12 is good at, the Pac-12 After Dark, because there's just not as many late games now. Maybe there will be more now that the SEC's coming back in the fold. But the Pac-12 has missed on the late night TV crew, especially on the East Coast. So he said they were open to most anything on the schedules. They haven't worked that out. They're still working with the TV partners. He said the TV partners have been very patient with them, had some exciting ideas. I think he said some surprises. So they could do a lot with that. And, you know, we'll see. We might see a bunch of different game times. Curious to see how that all works out. But they seem to be open to that on schedules. So Ray Anderson commented on that seventh game. Now, again, they didn't give any specifics of how it would work. But basically, it's the Pac-12 championship weekend. And the Pac-12 championship game was going to be December 18th. But that weekend would be the rest of the games as well. And the Big Ten is doing, like I said, they would have the South number two versus North number two, South number six versus North number six, all of that. They didn't announce that, but that's the implication of what's going to happen. And he said, you know, getting that extra game in on championship weekend, you know, certainly will help with the college football playoff consideration, but also for bowl consideration. And I don't think, you know, because the bowl announcement just happened, it could have been an opportunity for a team to get above 500, you know, go from 3-3 to 4-3. But, you know, it really is a chance to get that extra win and make a bowl game. So maybe that helps if you're a 5-2 team and you get in, you get picked for a bowl over a 6-4 team or whatever. I don't know. It's hard to say, but it's going to help out to have that extra game. So that's what they did that. And let's see what else. So we talked about the Larry Scott, you know, not leading the discussion for the playoff. He said people are very comfortable and thought it was appropriate sticking with the format we have for this year. And it's just, I agree with Andy Staples. He needed to be pushing this narrative, and comfortable is not what you need to be. And you're the Pac-12. Like, if you can expand, I mean, that could be a national championship for one of your teams if you just get an opportunity. The odds of getting a team in the college football playoff as of now are not very good. So to me, that's a failure by Larry Scott. He needed to push that narrative. And, you know, maybe he did behind the scenes, but he could have done it more publicly. And I think there'd be a lot. I mean, who's going to say, nah, we want a smaller college football playoff? People want a bigger playoff. The whole Pac-12 would obviously want one because you get an opportunity at least. There was talk about that crossover game. They didn't get any specifics about who it would be. And, you know, I mentioned you'd rather have it be a benefit to the better teams that, you know, not trying to schedule the toughest crossover game. You give them a better chance to get a win. But that will count towards your division, winning the division. So I know Kyle Bonagoro was tweeting out, he asked this question. He was curious about that. And he felt like, I think he said that the momentum was going towards not having that game count. And Larry Scott said they debated it. But in the end, they wanted all the games to count. And so it will count. Now, that makes the selection of that crossover game all that more important, because it's going to be a competitive advantage. And say you have two teams that are like fighting for the division, and say it's Washington and Oregon, or I don't know, say Cal and Oregon, whatever it is. And Cal plays Utah and Oregon plays Arizona. Well, you know, Cal's got to play the defending champ and of the South Division, and you know, Oregon doesn't. They're playing a team that's, you know, finishing five or six or whatever. I think that's, you know, it's a competitive disadvantage, and I, you know, but it's going to count. So hopefully they kind of pick this in more of a systematic way. Don't let it be random. You know, you don't want to say, well, that's a better game for TV. You want to try and give yourself at least a shot for that team to go undefeated. So at least in my opinion. So we'll see what they end up doing there, but we don't know that yet. We should know, you know, going forward, obviously in the next few days, they should announce some sort of schedule. And the last point I wrote down there was Larry Scott was asked whether the Halloween games were considered, and because some teams could play. And I know John Canzano and John Wilner were talking about the potential of a split schedule, a split start. I didn't feel like that was a possibility, but those guys thought it was. He said they were committed to making sure that we had a full 6 weeks of ramp up before the first game. And so that ended up being the November 6th, November 7th weekend. But also, you know, you could give, if someone starts early, you give them a competitive advantage by having a bye week. Who knows? Like, you could have, you know, what if Utah was ready to play? Could they have scheduled UMass or something? UMass is like a free agent right now. They're just trying to schedule games. I think BYU was still looking for some games. You could have had a couple of Pac-12 teams play like an out-of-conference game and just kind of get things rolling. But I think part of it was a competitive advantage, but really, and when we talked to Mike Bone, he expressed this a lot, that really the in like, because USC was one of the schools that wanted to try to play early, and he expressed that. He said, yeah, that was something we wanted to do. We wanted to play early, but he said, you know, at the end, it was more about, it was important that everyone was unified. And we heard that from the presidents as well. There was this unification. We saw the Big Ten, there wasn't unification. The Pac-12, they wanted that. So Mike Bone said he would have preferred Halloween, but in the end, it was more about unification. So they feel pretty comfortable about, you know, of what they're doing. So, and, you know, part of it, I think the Big Ten, it had an impact on the student athletes. And I think when the presidents went and talked to the students and faculty, that could have been part of the mental health aspect that Ray Anderson talked about. They got to watch these games. And I know we talked to some USC players on there was a Zoom call a few weeks ago, and, you know, them watching games, it had an impact on them. And seeing that once the Big Ten switched, you know, Mike Bone said that they recognized that they were an outlier, and that was something they wanted to rectify. And I think that became a big aspect of the whole pros, you know, and cons. So yeah, that's about it from what we're going on there. There was also, Mike Bowden did talk about working closely with, the UCLA athletic department. So Martin Jarmond and him have a relationship from the past, and they've worked together for the county guidelines in Los Angeles. So that's, you know, trying to mitigate, some of that and allow things to open up a little bit. My understanding is LA County will just allow the USC and UCLA to do what they want as long as the state approves it. So really the push right now is with the state government. And I think you're at least going to have, you know, Larry Scott being a bigger part of this. And it's not just the individual schools. So now that the CEOs have decided, they really need to get everything working. So if, you know, if Colorado can't practice for 2 weeks, that's going to be a disadvantage. If USC and UCLA can't get out there and start doing their 20-hour a week stuff, that's a disadvantage. Stanford, Cal, same sort of thing. So Oregon State. So hopefully they'll be able to, you know, clear any of those hurdles. It looks like they're going to be able to. and start things rolling. The other thing he said, I think I mentioned, is, you know, at least the testing machines that they arrive. He said he thought between 30 and 50 tests per hour. So it wasn't going to be, you could test the whole team at once, but over the course of a couple hours, you could test the entire team. And so that might be a little staggered thing where the offense comes in first and the defense later, whatever it is. But that daily testing, once everyone gets ramped up, I know the USC machine is there. I'm not sure about the rest of the schools. They didn't announce that on the Zoom call. But they did say it's going to take a little while to get everyone up to speed because they want the test to be as accurate as possible. But having that on-campus daily test that you can turn around in 15 minutes really was, you know, the biggest, I think, catalyst for this whole thing. All right. Well, that's about it. We're not going to take a question. We'll try to, like I said, we'll do a show early next week. Sorry you just had to listen to me rant on there for, well, almost 50 minutes. I can't believe my voice has held out this entire time. But that's basically what I learned today from the meeting, what I've been hearing from my sources and stuff. And hopefully that gives you kind of a better idea of what's going on in the Pac-12 world going forward. We got Pac-12 football, everybody. We're going to be able to preview games. We're going to be able to talk about games. We're going to pick games. It's going to be fun. So there's a lot of Twitter comments about David Woods being upset. I don't think he's upset that they're not going to have college football, but it'll be interesting to see where this goes, because we have seen a lot of cancellations. We've seen a lot of postponements and stuff. I don't know. Maybe we won't even make it to the season, but I'm optimistic. I think they're going to do it, and we'll just see going forward. All right. That's going to wrap it up. No David Woods this week. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions, and we will talk to you next time.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby Antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not going to survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.